Luke 15. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one of them. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. This is the word of the Lord. Would you pray with me? Living God, thank you that your word is just as active and as alive as Jesus is. Thank you that Jesus is not separated from his word, and that we can know you, Jesus, through your words that you have given to us. Would you open our hearts, our minds, our emotions, and our eyes to see and behold you, Jesus? As we behold you, would we be changed into your likeness? We thank you for Joseph and the word of the Lord that is in his heart. We pray that he would speak it with boldness and humility, and that we would receive it with fear and with humility. So be with us through Jesus, and by your Spirit we pray. Amen.
Amen. Well, it's good to have Lydia and the Thailand team back, and looking forward to hearing from them in 2 weeks, and I guess this means I can shave my Thailand beard that I was growing to support the team for a good cause. I've heard of hockey beards. This was my Thailand beard. Actually, that had nothing to do with it. Just happens. Some things happen. Well, glad you're here this morning, and if I look a little off today or kind of disoriented, I'm solo parenting, kind of right in the middle of 6 days of solo parenting right now. Hannah had to unexpectedly leave, and so I'm hanging in there. So far, so good. And yesterday, I went to do my, $300 points redemption at Shoppers, free groceries, had to do it. And it's hard to do with kids because those carts are so small and your cart's just overflowing and all the kids. But we managed and we did it, and here we are. So, but we'll be swimming with them tonight. And this was really kind of Hannah's thing that she put together. And just basically, we were able to do it for next to nothing. She really worked hard on that to do it for the church. But now she's left me with the task of it. And said, "That's not fair." But... well, welcome to Vision Sunday 2020, and for those of you new, this is an annual morning and message where we take a few moments to look back at where we've been, as well as assess kind of where we are in the present and look ahead into the future as well. And every year, we do this as a celebration, but this year especially is time to celebrate God's faithfulness. And several years ago, when the congregation was still about 50 people, the leaders of the church sat down together and made some goals all the way through the year 2020. And I remember when we finalized that document, it was scary stuff. And because it looked impossible on paper, these were God-sized, kind of audacious dreams and ideas. And 2019's goals were some of the biggest, because the farther out it is, the kind of, more bold you feel like you can be, maybe even a little bit less realistic, but you can dream a little bigger. And the dream or goal laid out back then for 2019 is that we would have a fully functioning youth ministry, small groups throughout the area, and send out a short-term missions or service team. And maybe that doesn't sound like huge goals now, but you got to understand when that was written, we had no youth. So how could we have a regularly functioning youth ministry? We were a small group, so why would we need small groups or life groups? And why would we be thinking of focusing our energy on a mission trip when we weren't even really reaching people in our own community? And who would have the time to lead that anyway? But here we are years later. And in the fall of 2019, we officially launched a regular full-time youth ministry with full-time youth pastors, started life groups throughout the area with over 75 people currently involved, and formed a team to go to Thailand who just got back. And it just overwhelms me. It just makes me weep. Just want to fall on my knees and say, you know, God, as the young people say, you know, you're ridiculous. That's a good thing, by the way, to say that. 2019 was an unbelievable year, one we just could never have imagined a few years ago. We hired two full-time pastors, Lydia and the Hazelmans, as a team, and it's just hard to believe that before this year, it was still just Hannah and I as far as pastoral staff. And I think the life and outward reach of the church can be really summed up in just one snapshot, that we had more people go through the Alpha course in January through February, over 50 people, than we used to have coming on Sunday mornings. So more people going through a discipleship program than Sunday mornings. So we're growing by nearly 50% a year, and actually, oddly enough, exactly 46% each of the last 2 years, to be exact. And so far this year, the 1 month recorded, we're on pace for over 50% growth. So just for context, that puts us in about 1% or less of churches. So only about 12% of churches in BC are growing, let alone growing by 50%. So hear me clearly here. That is not to draw attention to the church. That's not to puff us up with pride. As I said many times, growth is not always an indicator of health, although a healthy church will naturally grow. But the reason I want you to know this is because it should humble us and inspire us that we're a part of something rare, unique, and exciting that is way bigger than us. I mean, sleepy old Parksville and the Oceanside area is the site of one of the fastest growing churches. And sometimes I'm like, you know, why, Lord? Like, what's going on? What are you up to? What are you thinking, Lord? What's the significance? What are you planning for your name and for your fame? And I don't know all the answers, but I do know I want to be along for the ride. Be part of something that blesses this island for decades, even centuries, until the Lord returns. So I can say so much more about, you know, last year and past years, but my main goal this morning is to bring us to the present and look ahead as we make what is likely the biggest transition and faith step yet for our church, which is launching into a second service. And what I want to emphasize this morning is that moving to two services is all about reaching the one. And so kind of my title this morning, It Takes Two to Reach the One. And probably somebody's thought of that before in this applied to this situation, but maybe not. But I just kind of felt the Lord drop it in my heart a couple weeks ago. It takes two to reach the one. Maybe it's because he knows I like Marvin Gaye. You know, it takes two, baby. Could be. I'm a big fan. Jesus is all about reaching the one, finding the lost sheep, the one lost coin, the one lost son, as this parable in Luke 15 describes. And to do so, he's willing to go to great lengths to risk himself, to reject the status quo and sacrifice to reach the lost. And the lost represents, you know, a number of people and situations. It's those who have wandered away like the lost sheep, or those like the lost son who used to be under the care of the father but have turned away. But now there's a chance for them to come back into his family. So basically, the lost is just anyone not fully connected to, committed to, and serving Jesus and his church, his family. So as a way to launch the vision behind two services, I want to talk about how reaching the one involves three things. It involves faith or risk, sacrifice or some inconvenience, and then celebration or rejoicing. So let's start with faith. So we learn in this parable that Jesus leaves the 99 in the wilderness and goes after the one. In faith, he leaves the 99 and risks that scenario in himself to go after the one lost sheep. I mean, moving to two services, probably more than anything else, just comes down to an attitude of faith. Because almost every concern we can bring up about moving to two services just comes back to, do we trust God and what he's doing? If we believe God is the author of the growth, not us, then we have to believe that he will also be the author of the resources that we need to support it, right? This is God's idea to grow his church. And he knows his church better than we do, and he's decided that we can handle this. He's inviting us to participate with him, and the question is, will we step out in faith and confidence in him? So let me just kind of address what I think would tend to be kind of the knee-jerk reaction to this immediately, which myself included, and I think it's okay, is that our knee-jerk reaction to hearing about two services is the first place our mind goes is, well, what does this mean for me, right? How does this affect me? Is this good for me or is this bad for me? And it's okay to just kind of expose it, to put it out there, to say, yeah, that's my knee-jerk reaction, right? Like my thought is, okay, what does this mean for me? How early am I going to have to be here on Sunday? What does this mean for my kids? That's a long time to be. I'm going to be really hungry by the second service. You know, and like you start thinking through all of these things. That's our knee-jerk reaction. But then we just need to put that out there and expose it and say, that's not really a Jesus-like attitude, right? And I need to crucify those things that immediately come to mind. Because Philippians 4, or chapter 2, verses 4 and 5 says that the mindset of Christ is to consider the interest of others rather than our own interest. Right? So we look to the interest of others and immediately think of how will this impact others rather than how will this impact myself. And so instead of, you know, kind of asking, well, what does this mean for me as a pastor? What does this mean for me as a musician? What does this mean for me as a volunteer? What does this mean for me as a parent or so on? We kind of put that aside and say, okay, Lord, what is it that you're wanting? What is your heart in this? Lord, what is your knee-jerk reaction? And so if we look at this parable, we find that Jesus' knee-jerk reaction when he loses the sheep, he's kind of identified here as the shepherd and the sheep, is to go after the one who's lost. That's his first response. It's not to protect what he has. Rather, as soon as he realizes there's a lost sheep, his reaction is to risk everything, to let go of everything, and do whatever it takes to reach that sheep. I mean, notice there's no complacency in the shepherd. So the indication is he's pretty well off. He has 100 sheep. That's pretty good. And it would be so easy for him to say to the lost sheep, about the lost sheep, oh, well, I'm pretty successful. I still got 99. No big deal. I don't want to inconvenience myself or the other sheep just for that one. But that's not an option for the shepherd. And I know we could say, well, we're a stable church now. Look how far we've come. Let's be content and kind of level off at around 200 or less, which is basically the max capacity for one service. Keep things simple, sort of stay there, or just wait a little longer. But that's not what I signed up for. And I'm not here to just kind of play church and say, we made it. I'm here to be the church, which means reaching the lost and the lonely and the left out and the left behind, the hurting and hopeless and everyone else. And hopefully you know and feel that there is no shortage of hurting and hopeless people out there. And we can't ignore them for the sake of our own convenience or lack of faith. I think last week when we felt the Lord saying to pray for anyone struggling with sleep and anxiety, and I didn't know about Chantel's testimony till this morning, but you know, dark dreams or due to pain or whatever it might be, and man, it seemed like a quarter of the room put up their hand, and awesome to hear from so many who said how powerful it was and that they've never been prayed for that in church. But then I was thinking, now imagine how many people are out there who don't know how to turn to Jesus in their darkness, who live in fear of the terrors of night and need deliverance. And I just pray, oh Lord, draw them in and send us out in faith, that you will equip and aid us to make room for more. But to do all this, to reach our community more, it's going to require a little bit of sacrifice, which involves a little bit of inconvenience. So we feel this in the lost sheep parable, but then even more so in the lost coin story in verses 8 through 10 here. Remember, this is one parable told three different ways, kind of the same parable with three angles. But Jesus says, suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And so the first century reader especially would understand the sacrifice Jesus was talking about here. See, the house would have been dark. That's why she has to light a lamp. There's no electricity in the first century. And then the floor would have been dirt. That's why she has to get out her broom and start sweeping. That's why she has to do all these things. It would have been messy, dirty, inconvenient, and hard work for her to go after this one lost coin. And again, she could be like, well, I still got 9 coins. You know, in order to find that one, I got to find a lamp, I got to change my clothes, I got to get the broom out, it could take a while. I think I'll just be content with the 9 coins that I have. And Jesus is saying here, that's not the attitude of the kingdom. One's heart who is gripped by the condition of the lost and will inconvenience themselves with an attitude of holy discontent to do something about it. And it's true, change is always inconvenient. But anything of significance is pretty much always inconvenient. Comfortable Christians don't change history. And this life, I mean, it's just going to be over in a blink of an eye. And I want to say I gave it everything I had for the gospel and for the people of Oceanside. And if that means 2, 3, 4, 17 services to reach the lost, then I pray, oh Lord, give me the strength. Because if people are coming and searching for God, we're going to make room. And moving to 2 services is all about the one, and we have to maintain that focus. Otherwise, we'll start thinking kind of about ourselves and preserving the 99 and keeping track of the 9 coins and move into preservation mode, which doesn't reflect the wild, risk-taking, outward heart of God that we talked about last week. And so what are some of the sacrifices that we'll be called to make as a church? Well, just a few sacrifices to mention, 4 to be exact. First, the most obvious, every one of us is going to have to come at a new time. A different time than we do now. It's minor, but change is always hard. The services will be 9 and 11, and we'll be launching Easter Sunday, April 12th, where we'd be having 2 services anyway on that morning. So we got a few months to get ready. And I know, you know, 10 a.m. is kind of the sweet spot, right? That's why most churches that have one service do that time. But I can't imagine kind of standing before God one day and being like, Lord, yeah, I know you called me into that one worshiping community and I wanted to be a part of it, but man, you know, 9 a.m. was just too early and 11 a.m. was just a little too late and I just kind of stopped. Like, I just can't imagine verbalizing that before God. We're giving more opportunities for people, kind of casting our net a little wider. I mean, if they work at noon, they can come to the 9 a.m. If they have trouble in the morning due to chronic pain or illness or work late on Saturday night, they can come to the 11. If their kids nap at 11, they can come to the 9. If the kids sleep until 9, don't know who you are, you can come to the 11. You are blessed among people. And you might be thinking, well, people shouldn't need options, right? They should just come no matter what. And I realize that's the case for our core people and our mature believers, and that's awesome. But friends, we're in a post-Christian culture. And the truth is, we have to work harder than any generation in Canadian history because people are less inclined to participate in Christian worship and community than any generation in history. And so we must remove every possible barrier to give the greatest chance at spreading the seed, as we talked about last week. And a big part of Sundays are about reaching people who are unchurched or de-churched or curious about church. And every week we have new people coming who have never been to church or who have been out of church for decades, and the stories are amazing. And here's what studies have proven, that if you stay at one service, the people you'll lose are those moderately, casually, or not connected. In other words, potential disciples. Because what happens is those running late or they wake up late, it's easy to give up knowing that they won't be able to find parking or find a seat, or they'll have to sit in the front row, which is about as scary as it gets, because those are the only seats available. And we've already seen this happening. I mean, throughout January, people were having trouble finding parking. We had several services where there were people and families with their kids waiting outside in the lobby until the music time was over so that they could come in and try to navigate and find a seat. You've seen the washroom lineups out the door during the greeting and fellowship time. Our kids' spaces are just completely maxed out. So, I mean, two services, not actually even primarily about this space, the sanctuary, although we are at sort of what would be considered capacity, 75% considered full, viewed as no room. But it's really more about the other areas. So there's always, you know, a bit of a price to pay to embrace the Great Commission. But to be honest, in the scope of things, moving to two services, whether it's kind of getting up a little earlier or staying out a little later, I mean, that's a pretty small price, agreed? Like, it's not that big of a price to pay. So the first sacrifice is obvious. We move from one time that we're used to two times that we're not used to, and all of us will have to kind of embrace that as a minor sacrifice. Second, obviously we're going to need more volunteering, more volunteers, more people involved to make all this happen. And this is where it gets fun, because when you step out in faith and see God's supply, whether you're a current volunteer or going to be a new one, it's just so much fun to be a part of. And here's where we kind of lean into the story of this church and the graced history of this church. I remember when we moved from one kid's class to two kids' classes. And that was a massive step of faith. We're like, whoa, we're going to have to double, maybe triple our volunteers. Where are we going to get those people from? We've already like kind of maxed out our resources trying to get everybody possible. But we did it, and God supplied. And then I remember when we moved from two kids' classes to three kids' classes, and we're like, how are we going to do this? And some people are like, we can't do this. But we stepped out in faith to make room for the kids, and God supplied. And then more recently, we added a fourth class, preteens, and God has supplied. Or look at our hospitality ministry. Did you know not too long ago, we had one person, one column in kind of the volunteer scheduling, one person who did all the greeting, who made all the coffee, who oversee the whole lobby, and all that space. That wasn't that long ago. And now we have greeters at every door. I mean, we used to only have to use the front door because we only had to use the front lot. We have greeters at every door. We have separate people who can barely keep up with the coffee and all of that hospitality. And we have ushers in here. So, right, that team has expanded like crazy. So two services is going to be similar. In a lot of areas, we're going to need to kind of double our volunteers. We're going to need greater participation. After the service last week, someone proactively came up to me and said, hey, you mentioned something about two services. I imagine we're going to need more people. I'd like to volunteer for the audiovisual team and start to get involved. And that just kind of like melted my heart, right? Like, you don't even need to hear this message. Like, you already caught the vision that we're going to need more people. And that's great. So whether you're a musician, a tech person, someone who likes to make coffee, greet, will especially need kids, helpers, and workers. I mean, that's huge. When you think about the lost, when you think about the one, I hope you think about kids. I hope you think about children. Because studies tell us that's when people come to Christ, before the age of 12. But whatever it is, you can fill out a volunteer application as we get ready for two services. And be patient. Our systems are kind of catching up with things, and we're a bit overwhelmed. But be persistent, but also be patient, and we'll get you plugged in eventually. The third area of sacrifice is relational, or relationships. So this is always a legitimate concern, and I understand that. And that's this: what about the people I don't get to see anymore when we move to different services? So let me address this just in a few ways. Number one, this was the big reason behind life groups. We saw this coming down the road that eventually we're going to move to two services. And so that's why we knew we would need life groups to facilitate close relationships and seeing each other throughout the week and building those and getting to know people. So you can get in a group and talk to Lydia. Second, this transition will actually make us more, not less, effective relationally. Let me explain. Research tells us that the average person can only truly know 150 people. That includes your family, your friends, your social networks, your mom's group, your gym where you belong, whatever it might be. So as it stands now, we can't possibly all know each other in the current format, which well exceeds 150 people. And you've probably felt this at times, and I have for sure, where Sunday mornings have just become kind of dizzying. And I don't get to say hi to everyone or meet every new person or notice who's missing like I used to. And I just really don't like that. So probably what I'm most excited about for two services is being able to keep the DNA of our church culture, that warm, inviting family feel. And many of you joined the church when it was 50 people, 75 people, 100 people, where you could kind of almost get to know everyone. So this is a great chance to recapture some of that intimacy, to maintain what got us to this point in the first place, that kind of culture, right? It's kind of like the Cheers slogan, I want to go where everybody knows my name. And this is why we're not interested in a bigger sanctuary or more seating, and I know people have asked about that, but I'd actually prefer more services instead, for now at least, so we can maintain that feel. We're in a service, you can kind of see or say hi to almost everyone, and so that we can invest financially more in ministries and people rather than facility. So I believe this is a gain, not a loss, in terms of relationships. And then the last area of sacrifice, of course, would be in our giving or in financial ways. So because the church is growing at such a fast rate, almost 50%, giving doesn't keep up with that growth. And it can take people a while, especially new Christians or unchurched, to understand tithing and giving right away and how the kingdom works. And so we'll kind of patiently walk beside people. So I'm calling especially on mature believers to do what's necessary, to inconvenience yourself financially for the sake of growing the kingdom. And one of the things we're celebrating this morning is that we did that, and you did that. Right, we grew rapidly, especially toward the end of 2019, and we had to update some things to kind of accommodate that and hire new staff and all of that. And we went from a $50,000 deficit in September to finishing the year in the black, which is what we're celebrating with our pizza party today. And it's our joy just as pastors to do this, to pay for this. We just couldn't be happier. We're thrilled because it just sets us up well for the future. But in order to stay healthy, we'll need continual regular giving to make this transition. Jesus says in Luke chapter 16, verse 9, that we should use our worldly wealth to reach people, and that if we do so, we will have an eternal reward. And it's just so much fun to engage God in this way in your finances, in faith, and in the Great Commission. And we're being as wise and prudent as possible as a church with finances. All of the staff make kind of the same modest salary, and it's remained basically the same the last 5 years by choice, so that we can invest in other ministries and more staff when needed. And, you know, my goal is always to figure out a way to live on as little as possible so we can invest as much as possible into the church. My ultimate goal is just to work for free someday, right? That's that, so that we can just invest as much as possible in the church, because it's about sacrificing now for the good of the church and especially future generations. So we'll all do what we can, sacrificing in big and little ways for the kingdom. So all of us are going to be called to sacrifice a little, some to varying degrees, but whether it's in convenience, in time, as volunteers, in relationships, or in our finances. But even though in a way these are sacrifices, I really see them more as opportunities, right? That you're needed. God has a place for you in his church. He's looking for people to help continue to spread his love. And it's an opportunity to say, God, where do you want me in this transition? And all of this is something really worth celebrating, in rejoicing in and over. That's the last point. Reaching the lost involves celebration and rejoicing. So in all three of these stories in this parable, there's a call to celebrate over reaching the lost. Verse 6, verse 9, verse 32, where it says, we had to celebrate and be glad. And this is worth rejoicing. This is exciting, right? Is it challenging? Yeah. We're experiencing more growth each month than we used to experience in a year or two, which means we have to change quickly. And it's why for some, it probably feels like this came a little fast, but we've just had to kind of adjust to the sudden growth. But if that's what it takes, I rejoice over that problem. And this is kind of like planting a new church in a way. Like, it's really exciting to be a part of. It's gospel living, Great Commission living. And as we step out in faith and as we risk ourselves and sacrifice and inconvenience ourselves in some areas, don't forget to celebrate and have an attitude of rejoicing, because all of this is great news. And I can't wait. I mean, I'm really excited. And you guys know, it takes a lot to get me excited. Like, I'm kind of like a wet blanket most of the time, at least according to Hannah. And maybe others. But it takes a lot to get me excited. But what I've found is, now that this is real and we're stepping out, my passion for the lost has just come to a new level. God is just rekindling the passion for the lost in my heart, because I realize there's going to be a lot of room. And we can just freely, as we talked about, scatter that seed and spread that seed, knowing we don't have to worry about if we're going to find them or if we're going to see them or if they're going to feel welcomed or greeted or whatever it is. So I'm excited to go forward. I think there's really just no better way to launch into this vision of God's big hearts than with communion and by going to the Lord's table. Because here's the truth. I don't want to enter into any work apart from God's grace. And communion reminds us of this, that we need his grace to sustain us, to energize us, to motivate us, and to nourish us. And it is here at this table that we are acting out the message that we then carry out into the world, namely God's invitation to welcoming sinners through the work of Christ. And it's in this meal that we're about to have, not the pizza one, this one, that we remember Jesus' table fellowship with the lost, those on the margins, and therefore renew our commitments in our own lives to make sure we are doing the same, that is, reaching the one like Jesus. So I'm going to invite the band and the servers to kind of make their way up.